August, 2098. It was a bright, warm day, a milder emulation of the summer back on Earth, and Emery had been making the most of it, engaged in her favorite sport, chasing boys. Due to her unfair advantages, the Greenwooders rarely let her play any other sport, except under frustrating restrictions. Her quarry today was younger, a cute, shy, black-haired boy her own age, whom she'd decided to bring out of his shell. The poor thing had jumped halfway to the axis when she'd pinched his adorable buns, and he'd turned out to be a runner, though he let himself get cornered so easily that it had to be intentional. She was just about to undo her top and give him the thrill of his life when his eyes suddenly lifted from her chest, looking past her in terror.
Oh, hell.
Emery figured a parent or teacher was behind her, gearing up for a stern lecture on morality. Emery whirled to behold the kind of scene she thought only happened on the news and only on other habitats. Over in the town, Simbot-suited people were shooting at each other, using big, heavy weapons to try to punch through each other's armor. They didn't seem to be going after the Greenwooders, but they didn't seem to care who got in their way or whose homes or businesses got wrecked. The curve of the habitat gave Emery an overhead view, her enhanced vision letting her see the townspeople running desperately for cover, and some of them not moving at all. Emery suddenly remembered that her mother had been going into town today. Alarmed, she checked her bracelet cell phone for Lyra's locator signal and saw it flashing along with her father's on the edge of town. Good. She was with him. That meant she was safe. Now Emery just had to reach them, and she'd be safe too.
All right, kid, time to go home. Keep your head down. You'll be safe.
Then Emery raced toward her family, and she kept an eye out for other scared kids who might need her help. It was what the Emerald Blaze would do. She was confident that once her father made sure his ladies were safe, he'd go out and make those bad guys stop fighting. And then he'd save all the hurt people lying in the streets. The Blaze would stay to protect her mother while he did it. So she had to get there soon. Her hero needed his sidekick. As she rocketed forward, she saw the fighting moving toward her parents. But she saw something else, too. One of the armor-suited fighters wasn't using lethal weapons, and he was trying to keep the bad guys away from the townspeople. Emery recognized the Simbot from the news. It was one of the troubleshooters.
Here! Wow!
With her dad and a troubleshooter on the case, the bad guys would be in jail in no time. Once she got into town, the buildings blocked her view of the troubleshooter and the battle. But those were secondary concerns. She knew where she needed to go. But as she got close, she needed to leap over piles of burning debris and saw a lot of wrecked buildings and vehicles. The battle had passed right through here. She thanked the goddess that her mom was with her dad, who would... Then she saw him. It took her a moment to recognize him. He was down on his knees, shaking. He looked so small, so weak. That couldn't be Daddy, could it? What was that he was leaning over? It looked like...
No.
Couldn't be.
No.
No, that couldn't be her. It was just... Emerald couldn't understand what she was looking at. It looked like Mommy, but it couldn't be. Couldn't be a person. It looked like Mommy's face, but only half of it was there. There was a hole, and she could see a fire behind. Where was Mommy? Why wasn't Daddy looking for Mommy? How could he just kneel there, bawling like a little baby over this... that mound of... that thing? Why wasn't he stopping the bad guys? Why didn't he stop them from breaking things and that... Something knocked her forward. There was a metal monster pointing something at her, and Daddy just bawled, and Emery closed her eyes. And then she woke up, and strong arms picked her up. Daddy? But no, they were hard and cold. She looked, and it was the troubleshooter. His helmet was retracting, folding back behind like origami, and there was a kind face behind it, craggy, with a bushy mustache.
You're safe now, little one. Uncle Arkady has caught the bad guys. It will be all right now. No, not quite all right. I'm so sorry.
Emery tried to stop herself from turning, but couldn't. There was Daddy, rocking back and forth without a sound. And there was that... Mr. Arkady took a tentative step toward him.
Sir, I'm sorry for your loss, but you need to come away with me. The building may not be stable. Your daughter needs you now.
Daddy looked up at that.
Oh.
At first, he didn't seem to know where he was, like he was sleepwalking. But then his eyes focused on her. He was like a statue for a moment, and then he shook himself and stood up.
Oh, Emerald. My jewel. It's just us now. I'll take care of you now.
But as he talked, something welled up in Emery, something terrible that burned her inside.
No!
He reached for her, but she punched him, struggling in the troubleshooter's arms.
You didn't save her! Why didn't you save her? You were supposed to protect her! You let her die! It's your fault! I hate you! I hate you! I hate you! I hate you!
The look in his eyes was like the one he'd had before, a look of terrible loss. But she didn't care. He'd betrayed her. He'd failed her when it counted the most. She'd never hear her mother sing again, and it was his fault, and she knew she would hate him for the rest of her life. July 2107. Pellucidar Habitat. In orbit of Vesta. Emerald Blair took great satisfaction in punching herself in the face. Not that it was actually her face or even a reasonable facsimile. Rather, it was the face of the over-earnest, underweight Vestalian starlet who'd played her in that unauthorized VidNet biopic last month, the one they'd rushed into production to capitalize on the Chakra City incident. They could have gone virtual, but apparently figured the starlet's fame would be at least as big a draw as Emery's own, since they couldn't legally use her likeness anyway. Of course, that hadn't stopped Pellucidar's control cyber, Sorceress, from morphing the starlet's likeness onto an android's sologram skin and sending it to attack Emery. But Sorceress didn't seem to have much use for human laws right now, including the ones about not killing people, or rather, using her animatronic puppets to kill them.
You'd think a cyber programmed with every work of fiction ever made would know how cliched that is.
The sham droid's head snapped back far enough from the punch to warrant an obituary had it been the actual starlet. Emery's fantasy to that effect was marred by the fact that the sologram layer had been smashed in, leaving a fist-sized hole in the middle of its face. But the smart matter gel reformed into the starlet's celebrated features, and the neck quickly returned to normal.
You can't keep the Banshee down!
Damn it, I don't have time for this! Don't these backheads know they're in danger?
Vestans tended to be eccentric. Vesta was in the desert, the ice-poor inner belt, its habitats only able to survive on imported water and carbon. But Vesta's giant size and planet-like differentiated geology gave it a mineral wealth unequaled in the belt. So its civilization was heavy with entrepreneurs and elites, those who could not only afford to make the desert bloom, but could do so in style. Here was the home not only of the Striders' cybernetic and metallurgical industries, but their jewelry industry, their entertainment industry, their gambling industry, their erotic industry. Here were the wealthy elites accustomed to having their way, and here were the prosperous Terran emigres who sought the kind of luxuries they knew from home. Thus, Vesta was not as centralized as Ceres, despite being nearly as populous. Instead of one united cluster and various outliers, Vesta was circled by multiple large independent habitat states and their various tributaries, the latter of which included Pellucidar, a theme park habitat built by a Vestalia-based entertainment conglomerate but jointly managed by several Vestan states. It was an Earth-style immersive cyber-fantasy with a Strider twist, relying as much on solograms and bots as virtual projections. But there were still those who let themselves get too caught up in the illusions. Emery threw Banshee over her shoulder. The simulant rolled smoothly to its feet, wearing that patented pout of fury that made up half the starlet's repertoire of expressions.
You dragged me down into this life! You made me a criminal! But no more, Javon! I'm free of you now! And I swear to the goddess, I will devote the rest of my life to making amends for what you made me do! By fighting scum like you wherever!
Ugh, shut up!
Emery set her laser pistol to shock mode.
You don't know a vacant thing about it.
A moment later, electric discharges began raining down from the sky. Emery reviewed her visual logs, enhancing her peripheral glimpse of the attacker's forms against the patchwork landscape of the Bernal Sphere's far side.
Damn, the Zelkoids are back! Hey, Zephyr, any luck? I could use some backup here, you know.
I'm not exactly lounging on the veranda myself. I'm hacking my best, but Sorceress is a grandmaster player.
Z-
Zephyr, baby, this isn't a game.
In fact, Emery, that's exactly what it is. To her, anyway. She hasn't tried to harm me, just impede me.
Gah!
A lightning gun blast set fire to the tree sheltering Emery, forcing her to break cover and run across the clearing.
Why can't she extend the same courtesy to the rest of us?
I'm growing convinced she doesn't see the distinction.
Great, so she's schizophrenic.
I wouldn't say that. She's completely in touch with her own reality. It's just yours that gives her trouble.
Come again? Ugh!
From a cyber's perspective, physical reality can be somewhat virtual. Especially for a cyber like Sorceress, who has no physical body. Your reality is so limiting, after all. You can't recreate it on a whim. There are so many physical laws to follow. And it all happens so slowly. No offense, but your reality can get rather dull.
I wish.
But Emery supposed Zephyr knew whereof Zephyr spoke. Until recently, he hadn't had a physical body either, serving as one of the top data miners at TSC headquarters. Arkady had liked him and had often tried to talk him into becoming a troubleshooter's steed, ideally Emery's, once her apprenticeship ended, but he'd shown no interest in fieldwork. But after Arkady's death, Zephyr had changed his mind, agreeing to honor his friend's wishes after all.
And Sorceress was created to oversee a place whose residents can manipulate their physical reality at will.
Emery made an end run around Zeltoid ground forces.
Since her whole interaction with humans revolves around fantasy.
She doesn't understand the difference between fantasy and reality. I get it. Now how the flare do we fix it?
Emery spotted the Zeltoid command saucer and began firing at it, knowing that destroying it would send the Cyclopean green monsters back to their home dimension, or whatever the closest approximation would be in this setting. The beam fizzled out, so she ejected the power pack and plugged in another from her belt.
I'm almost at the brain center, Zeph. I don't want to have to hurt her, but if you can't lock her into autistic mode... Ah! Back! I think the dragon's coming back!
Don't worry, Emery. You're not the target. I asked Sorceress to find out how Zeltoids would fare against it.
You mean, you got through to her?
We've been having quite a lively debate for the past few seconds. It took some doing, but I think I persuaded her to accept my basic premise that reality and fantasy are two different things. Personally, I suspect she's just humoring me. I think she likes me.
The dragon began tearing through the Zeltoid lines and sending them scattering.
Oh, you little Lothario. See, I told you that voice of yours can melt any gal in her boots.
Anyway, I've convinced her to take some time off to explore the philosophical ramifications of the idea. The simulations should be shutting down even now.
Yep.
The dragons, Zeltoids, and other manifestations began slumping to the ground and reverting to raw sologram form.
They're melting! They're melting!
What a word.
What a sidekick. What a team, huh?
Who are you calling sidekick? I did all the work. You were just the damsel in distress. And you know, you could have avoided a lot of it if you'd stayed more detached about your virtual opponents.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's just, Banshee clicked my buttons, you know?
And this is an excuse, how?
You're right, What the hell are you looking at?
Some of the spectators had drawn near, gawking at her. A gangly teen dressed rather unconvincingly as Samurai, Private Eye, with a trench coat and fedora over a t-shirt patterned like medieval Japanese armor, tilted his head.
So, you're the real one?
The one and only.
Huh. You were cuter in the movie.
Emery slowly, carefully, holstered her sidearm. Pellucidar's various managing partners soon moved in to secure the theme park and began bickering over whether Sorceress should be reprogrammed or destroyed altogether. Emery wasn't exactly a fan of the cyber. She had killed 6 people, after all. But the thought of anyone being put to death because they had no legal rights outraged her, and she made that known to the Vestans. The one thing they could agree on, however, was that they didn't let outsiders dictate their policies. The matter was rendered moot when orders came in to report to the TSC's local branch headquarters as soon as possible. Emery didn't see the need. This Gregor Tai fellow from Ceres had been meeting with small groups of troubleshooters as their availability allowed, and Emery had picked up the gist of it from them, how his Earth-backed consortium had offered to provide the Corps with new backing and resources. Sure, she couldn't blame Earth for wanting to pay more attention to events out here after Chakra City, and it was easier to be sympathetic to them now. But Emery hated abandoning Sorceress to her fate.
You did the best you could, Emery.
Zephyr kneaded her sore muscles that night. The thrust of his engines as he moved into a polar orbit, holding her against the massage pad without the need for straps or handholds.
I think you made her case to the press very well. And nationalist egos aside, a troubleshooter's endorsement carries a lot of weight.
His words brought her some comfort, as did the touch of his sologram avatar. She'd chosen it to look like a marble statue of a nude, clean-shaven Greek god with graceful white wings, not unlike the Zephyrus of myth, but its hands felt like warm flesh and secreted their own lubrication.
Oh, if anybody listens, all the attention right now is on that Thai guy. Oh, yeah.
People pay attention to you.
Sure, because I'm the sex pot with a cinematic past. I'm someone they gawk at, not someone they listen to. Oh, that won't help Sorceress.
The avatar smiled. It wasn't just a simulation. Cyber emotions may have been less intense than the human kind, without hormones to fire them to passion. But a sapient mind, guided by choice and experience rather than rigid programming, needed motivations to impel action and shape behavior. She knew by now that Zephyr's kindness was real. Sometimes she was sorely tempted to take his avatar to bed, but without a skeleton like Sorceress's toys, it could never hold up to her affections.
You're also the one who saved Earth from a bioterror attack and the patrons of Pellucidar from a very cliched demise. I'd call that a respectable beginning.
Feels more like too little too late to me. Too many people I couldn't save.
I don't think the public sees it that way.
Well, I try not to worry about what the public thinks.
You love the camera.
And it's mutual, baby cakes.
Maybe that's the problem right there. Your conscious vanity. Despite your commitment to staying more focused in crises, you still play up your sex appeal otherwise. If you want to be taken seriously...
No, I've heard that a million times and it's still bullshit. Nobody should have to hide what they are to be accepted. I am proud of what I got. All of it. Inside and out. And if people can't respect the whole package, I'm not the one who should have to adjust. Oh, yeah.
Fair enough. It seems like a harder way of going about it, though.
Her eyes roved over his avatar's nude form.
Anything worthwhile is hard, baby.
Russell City Habitat, in orbit of Vesta. Though the Troubleshooter Corps had headquarters at Ceres and Vesta for the sake of efficiency and access to resources, it had established them in small habitats known for their political independence. Demetria was an old, diminutive Bernal sphere established to support the scientific study of Ceres, its tight polar orbit precluding it from joining into the sheaf. The docking bay held more TSC ships than Emery had seen in one place since Arcadi's funeral.
Does he really have to see so many of us at once? Somewhere there's a crime happening, you know.
Give him a chance.
Sally Knox led Emery to the meeting room. Despite being only 1.20 meters, Sally kept up a pace that Emery had trouble matching. The cherub-faced, middle-aged blonde had been a mainstay of the TSC's clerical support staff from the beginning and showed no sign of slowing down. Emery had never quite figured out what her official job was, since she did so many different tasks, skillfully, efficiently, and, when needed, ruthlessly. Sensei had nicknamed her the Troubleshooter's Troubleshooter. It was oddly unsurprising to find her here instead of back at Demetria. Some troubleshooters suspected there was more than one of her.
Mr. Tai thought it was important to share his ideas with you all in person. He didn't want to do it more times than necessary. You're one of the lost stragglers.
Well, I've been busy.
Oh, yes. Suffering in a luxury resort. We all bleed for you.
Emery was about to protest that she hadn't had much fun there, but she knew it would have no effect. And if Sally had such a high opinion of this Gregor Tai, by her standards, her words constituted a ringing endorsement, then Emery figured it would be worth hearing what he had to say. The meeting room was already occupied by most of the T-shooters whose ships Emery had seen in the bay. Unfortunately, Kari wasn't among those present. Most of the shooters were in civilian garb, though few dressed quite as informally as Emery herself. She wore a hip-hugger miniskirt that was barely more than a wide belt, plus a cut-off Pellucidar T-shirt displaying animated scenes of the habitat's more adult-oriented attractions. She wondered if her choice of wardrobe had been a bit too deliberately irreverent. But this was how she'd chosen to present herself to Tai, and that was that. Whether he could take her seriously was not the issue, as far as Emery was concerned. The room was set up with a buffet table and a couple of dozen seats arranged in the round. Emery found herself being waved over to the table by the Dharma Bums, the nickname with which Vijay and Marut Pandalai,
officially codenamed Arjun and Bhima, had been saddled under protest.
Hey, bums.
Hey, boobs. Nice top.
Thanks. I'm commemorating recent victory. Ooh, is that Miriam's homemade hummus?
We heard. Insane amusement park cyber plus evil twin, all in one mission.
Vijay put an arm around her.
For her encore. She'll stop her long-lost sister from changing history with the help of ancient astronauts.
Wait a minute. Which one will the ancient astronauts be helping?
Oh, vac it, you guys. God, am I ever gonna live this down? Ooh, grapes.
Not if we can help it.
Aw, go vac yourselves out the nearest airlock. See if I ever take you bums to bed again.
Sounds like a challenge.
By now, there was a full room, and finally, Lydia Muchangi entered. A lissom Martian with regal African features and a shaved head, she was one of the founding troubleshooters. Codenamed Lodestar for her legendary ability to find anyone or anything. These days, she applied her superhuman intellect more toward administration and education, and was currently in charge of the Russell City HQ. She was accompanied by a tall, Terran-built man who made Emery perk up with interest. He was a square-jawed Asian type, maybe mid-40s and quite fit, with piercing eyes and a sensuous mouth.
Ooh, this might not suck after all.
Thank you all for coming. I know you're all eager to get back into action, and I promise you won't be kept long. But Sensei and I believe that what our guest, Mr. Gregor Tai of the Syrian States, has to offer us will be helpful to our efforts in the field and deserves a hearing. Mr. Tai?
Thank you, Lydia. I'm quite pleased to meet you all. My name is Greg Tai, and as you've heard by now, I represent a consortium of state and private interest within the Syrian States, with ties to similar groups on Earth. I'm not a member of either government, though they've both endorsed our efforts. I understand how important the neutrality of the Troubleshooter Corps is to your work, and I want to assure you I have no desire to undermine that.
Before going into his spiel, Tai made his way around the line, greeting each of the troubleshooters in turn. When he got to Emery, he smiled, seeming totally unfazed by her wardrobe or by the carrot stick stuffing her mouth.
Emerald Blair, of course. I wanted to thank you particularly for your role in thwarting the Neogaian attack. I grew up on Earth, and I still have family there.
Well, my mentor deserved the real credit.
Certainly. That was a great loss. I've been to see his family already. My group is already working to set up an educational foundation in his name. Part of our efforts to build closer ties between UNEX and the Belt.
I appreciate that.
And I saw your press conference after the Pellucidar affair. I thought you'd like to know I've contacted some of Siri's top cyber rights attorneys about Sorceress's case.
Oh, wow. That's great.
It's the least we could do to thank you, Emerald.
Emery.
Emery. Thank you.
Oh, wow. Call me Emery. Somebody's in love.
Emery shoved a pita wedge in Vijay's mouth to shut him up. When Tai completed his circuit, he looked around in puzzlement.
Isn't there still one person I haven't met? Hijab? Does anyone know where she is? Am I missing some joke?
You're missing something, at least.
Tai whirled, startled. Hijab finally deigned to show herself, disengaging the camouflage function of her garb. When she stood still against the wall, her metamaterial suit blending with her surroundings and damping her sounds and scents, Mariam Khalid was virtually undetectable to anyone who did not know where to look.
Hijab, hello. I was hoping to meet you in civilian form, as it were.
Perhaps in time, Mr. Tai. Trust must be earned.
Mariam was one of the few troubleshooters to use a secret identity. Originally an Olberstadt detective, she had run afoul of the Johannes Syndicate and seen her husband and several innocent bystanders murdered in retaliation. To protect her children while continuing the fight, she had taken a cue from Muslim women of the past who had used the veil for espionage and covert resistance, but had added a high-tech Vestan twist.
Very true. I'm sure you have excellent reasons for your secrecy, but I intend to do my best to earn your trust. All of your trust.
As Tai began his presentation, most of the shooters took seats.
I know what a lot of you must be thinking, since it's a concern your colleagues before you have expressed. Should the Corps be getting in bed with the CS, sharing resources directly, let alone establishing closer ties with Earth? My answer is that what we're offering is merely an expansion on the kind of endorsement and cooperation that the TSC already gets from Ceres and other Belt governments and NGOs. It's our hope that Vestin, Eunomian, and Outer States will eventually join in as well. Why now? Because Chakra City has changed things. Since the war ended, Unex has been content to focus inward and leave us to our own devices. The Niagayan attack proved that they can no longer do that. The Striders' problems are their problems too.
And a lot of their problems become ours when they deport lunatics like the Niagayans out here in the first place.
That's true, Marut. The bottom line is, we can't go on pretending our fates aren't intertwined. Earth has taken a renewed interest in keeping the peace in the belt. But nobody wants a repeat of the circumstances that led to the war, with Earth wielding direct power over Strider affairs. That's why we Syrians feel we can offer a solution. We have strong ties to both communities. The oldest Strider nation, yet with a large population of Terran emigres, myself included. That means Earth can trust us to handle the matter internally, and hopefully, it means that our fellow Striders can trust that we're acting in their best interests, not just Earth's. And that's where the Troubleshooter Corps is key. Your members come from all over the Belt, even Mars. And so you're respected and trusted Belt-wide. Who better to spearhead the effort to work together for our common security?
Most of us are also mods, or cybers. By Earth law, we shouldn't exist. Yet you say you represent the interest of Earth.
It's true, VJ, that Earth still takes a conservative view of human enhancement. Or rather, they've enhanced themselves more on a collective level, through the global information network and the resources and expertise it allows any individual to access. Striders have taken a more individualized approach, enhancing individual humans rather than humanity as a whole, developing individual artificial sentiences rather than relying on a global network, which, granted, you can't do anyway with the time lags involved out here. There are those on Earth, and admittedly in the Syrian states, who see that as a potential threat due to the power it can give to unethical individuals. I think events like Chakra City demonstrate that those concerns are valid. But my consortium believes, I believe, that the transhuman age is here, and we need to adapt to that reality. It hasn't brought the rapture or the apocalypse, hasn't made us gods or monsters, and it's not going to. We're still what we were, just with more power, for better or worse. So instead of planning for some kind of imaginary existential clash between old humanity and transhumanity, we need to keep sight of the more fundamental distinctions between right and wrong, order and chaos. Those of us who stand for order would be fools not to ally with transhumans to share our goals. The Troubleshooters are exactly that, a superhuman force for peace and order, superheroes, in the truest sense.
We know why us.
Tor Thorson was a gene-modded man-mountain who'd been a pro wrestler before joining the Corps. Most T-shooters didn't use their code names in everyday life, but only Tor's mother called him Ranulf.
But why you?
Because the Syrian States is the only Belt nation with the resources and infrastructure necessary to build up the TSC into the potent, system-wide peacekeeping organization it needs to become.
So what? We get a pass of new Shiver Troubleshooters?
That was Cowboy Bhattacharya. One of those who stood, or in his case, swaggered, to express their suspicion.
Naturally, the Corps will need to bring in new recruits, but, as always, they will be drawn from throughout the system. And they'll still have to pass your training, and Ceres won't interfere with your procedures or standards. But there's more we can offer. The Consortium can exert political influence on your behalf, work with you to coordinate system-wide peacekeeping efforts. We can bring in Syrian and Terran expertise to improve your technology and your techniques.
Ain't nothing wrong with our techniques.
But couldn't you do better? Certainly you do the best you can in response to the crises that arise out here, but that's just it. You respond. You wait for something to go wrong and try to minimize the damage. But with the destructive power that's now available to even a small fringe group or gang, the magnitude of that damage is just too great. If you wait until an attack comes, then you're already too late. Too many people will be lost before you get the chance to save them. And too many innocents will be endangered in the crossfire between you and the bad guys.
So what are you proposing? Can you offer us psychics?
We don't need them. Look, these days earthquakes, hurricanes, and solar flares can be predicted so preventative measures can be taken. We can monitor buildings, spacecraft, or habitats, anticipate when they're about to fail, and calculate what it takes to preserve them. all it takes is enough data and a good computer model. Now, the social sciences may not be as precise as the physical, but it's still possible to extrapolate trends, anticipate patterns, see trouble building before it breaks. This is part of what keeps Earth, and increasingly the Sheaf, united and peaceful. We're all interconnected, linked into one vast conversation whose trends can be documented, sensed, and analyzed. To put it simply, we listen to each other, so we can know when people are discontented or frustrated, understand the root causes, and deduce the most effective resolution. I know. I'm not here to lecture you on the benefits of an interconnected existence. I know how much you cherish your independence out here. But it's that same independence, taken to an extreme, that makes it easier for things to go wrong. For mobsters, fanatics, and rogue states to operate unimpeded, for people to suffer without anyone coming to their rescue. I think there's a way to have the best of both worlds. Being independent doesn't have to mean being isolated or out of touch with your surroundings. If astrobiologists can monitor life in other star systems, how hard can it be for the troubleshooters to gather the information you need to see trouble coming before it happens?
So you propose to enhance our intelligence-gathering capabilities?
For a start. Also, the consortium would assist you in using advanced pattern recognition, data mining, and evolutionary models to dig up warning signs so we can head off trouble before it happens.
Head off how? We can't exactly say invade Neo Gaia before they strike again. There's only 73 of us.
Force is a last resort. That's something I know Sensei Villarreal has taught you all.
Emery glanced at Cowboy, who was scowling past the lowered brim of his Stetson.
But that means there must be other options available before force becomes necessary. All too often, you have to use force because it's too late for alternatives. But if we can anticipate problem areas, home in on the political or economic or social factors driving people toward conflict, then that allows us to try other tactics before it's too late. Ceres, with cooperation from other belt powers, of course, can bring diplomacy to bear on dangerous fringe habitats, exert humanitarian and educational efforts to treat the causes of their aggression and bring them into the fold.
Cowboy tilted the Stetson back.
What, put us out of a job?
I don't see that happening for a long time. The troubleshooters are the linchpins of the whole project. You're not only fighters, you're trained negotiators, relief workers, not to mention having the skills and insight necessary to gather and process the information we'd need. And certainly your cyber partners can play a key role there as well. Being experts in everything, being able to mine and analyze vast amounts of data creatively when no global network is available to give advice is the whole reason they exist. And the TSC represents one of the largest concentrations of cyber minds in Solsys, probably the largest one whose members are treated as free and equal beings and truly encouraged to live up to their full potential.
Zephyr spoke through Emery's cell phone.
I may blush.
All of you, troubleshooters and cybers, are a resource capable of even greater potential than you've achieved so far. I'm just here to help you achieve it, to help you save more lives, prevent more tragedies by acting sooner and more effectively. And that's my spiel. I'll be happy to answer any questions now.
Emery listened absently to the questions and answers, but mostly she was mulling over what she'd already heard. The details didn't concern her as much as the big picture. Stopping tragedies before they happen. Saving lives before they're lost. Vijay caught her introspection and stroked her chin, gently turning her face toward him. He used his subvocal communicator.
Looks like he got to you.
I'm up for anything that saves more lives.
Well, sure. But all this diplomacy and humanitarianism, not a lot of action. You want to put yourself out of a job?
Gladly, if it means fewer kids have to lose their mothers.
Don't give me platitudes, Blaze. You live for action.
Emery glared at him. If Vijay thought it was just a platitude, then he didn't know her as well as he thought. Thankfully, Zephyr took that moment to interject.
Do you really think this new approach will be a good idea?
Why wouldn't it be? Sure sounds good to me.
Emotionally, yes. But what about intellectually?
I leave that to you, partner. If you have questions, you can ask him.
Nothing definite yet. I need more information. I'm just suggesting that a change of this magnitude needs to be considered carefully.
Maybe, but Ty's right. As it is, we're fighting a losing battle.
September 2107. Jupiter Trojan Asteroids, L5 Group. Emery's prodigious yawn went unremarked by the rest of the universe. She was going crazy, cooped up in her spacesuit for all these hours with nothing to do but drift. She was forced to wonder if maybe Vijay had been right 6 weeks back about her tolerance for the quiet life. True, there were four other troubleshooters out here with her, tethered together in a quincunx formation, and she could talk to them through the tethers if she wanted. Unfortunately, their stealth approach precluded any non-essential power use. She could barely even see the others except as dark areas occulting the stars. Since their suits were in full stealth mode, lights off, all surfaces tuned to wide-spectrum black, helmet visors polarized to block heat radiation. Kilometers-long superconducting nanofilaments trailed behind them to dissipate their body heat as diffusely as possible. Still, she was getting hot and sweaty in this thing. She'd slowed her metabolism as much as she could during the long approach, another effective damper on conversation, but now the target was in sight, and they had to warm up their muscles for the fight that was coming. And it would be a doozy. This was the largest TSC team op Emery had ever been on, not counting training exercises. Five shooters, nearly all chosen for their combat skills. Kari was here, as was Cowboy, unfortunately. Along with Emery, they provided finesse, firepower, and raw strength. Then there was Elise Tin Lizzy Pasteris, her dainty Martian frame encased in a sleek battle simbot a generation beyond Arcadi's old jalopy, and Juan Jackknife Lopez, who had done the key intelligence work leading up to this raid. Since their target was a small milli-G stroid only a few kilometers across, Jackknife had opted to go with a multi-directional thruster unit rather than any of his interchangeable pairs of specialized prosthetic legs. Juan could have easily enough had new legs grown after his childhood accident, but had decided that being stuck with a single limited pair of natural legs was too great a handicap. His subsequent replacement of his arms with prosthetics had been voluntary. With that kind of history, Juan had been a natural recruitment target for the Mekani, and at Greg Tai's urging, he'd begun responding to their advances, pretending to have been convinced at last that the singularity was truly nigh, that mechanical life was destined to rise to godhood and cleanse the universe of putrid flesh. Never mind that nobody had ever been able to create a consciousness, AI or human, that substantially exceeded the intellect of the greatest human geniuses. You could make a cyber that thought faster than Einstein and had access to a greater range of knowledge, but try to make its mind more complex and you soon passed a point of diminishing returns, the same as if you tried to pile too much muscle or too many extra limbs on a human body and ended up with a form too cumbersome to function. Attempts to create metasapiens had resulted only in madness or total cognitive collapse. But the Mekani didn't care about the facts. It was rumored that they worshipped such a mad superbrain as their god, obeying its ravings as Delphic pronouncements. They were so blindly certain of their belief that they didn't question Jackknife's swift conversion. It had enabled him to get close enough to crack the cult's files and discover their master plan to accelerate Armageddon. Quite a payoff for a policy that had only been in effect for a few weeks. But then, it wasn't the first. A number of extremist groups had launched copycat attacks in the months since Chakra City, some targeting Earth, others Mars, others their neighbors in the Belt. The Corps' new policy of trying to head off crises before they broke had been instituted not a moment too soon. Emery wished Jackknife could have uncovered this scheme a week or two earlier, though. As the target's droid drew closer, Emery peered at it in infrared. It was chilly out here in the Trojans, far from Sol, but the droid's surface swarmed with hundreds of heat signatures. A few were Mekani cultists. The rest, the bigger ones, were pure robots, all identical, all heavily armed and armored. And they were making more of themselves. They were Oxons, designed to replicate themselves from available materials. Oh, and kill all humans while they were at it. Diplomacy was useless. The Mekani were fanatics. Luckily, they were also idiots, believing that they could hide their operations simply by being far away from civilization. There were no horizons in space and plenty of good telescopes, so once Jackknife had found what to look for, the droid base had been easy to locate. Taking it out was not so easy, however. A large strike force or a missile would set off their defense systems or give them time to escape. Even one surviving Oxon would be too many. And at least some Mekani had to be taken alive for interrogation to ensure the rest could be tracked down, and Oxon remains would have to be recovered and studied to develop countermeasures. So, a surgical strike was the best option. Plan A had been to send in a squad of combat drones under Jackknife's supervision. But Juan had pointed out that the drone's software protocols were fairly standardized, and that Mekani crackers had subverted similar models in the past. So that left old-school combat, with live humans putting themselves in harm's way and hoping their plan was good enough to keep them living. The five of them had been dropped off by a Syrian vessel passing by on an innocuous-looking course, then accelerated by a spinning tether onto a rendezvous trajectory, and then left to drift for 18 hours as their course converged with the Stroid. Of course, the strike team couldn't hide in open space any better than the Mekani could. Even with all their attempts at cooling and camouflage, their bodies still radiated at 310K, and that energy had to go somewhere. The most they could hope for was to make their heat signature small and dim enough to be hard to spot against the thermal clutter of the belt and inner system behind them. Five bits of self-aware jetsam were all that stood in the way of a system-wide invasion, and their success depended on their ability to hide in plain sight. So far, they hadn't been attacked. Perhaps the Mekani's blind faith in their predestined triumph kept them from watching the skies too closely. But the team still had to make the landing in one piece. Well, one piece each. The Stroid was approaching awfully fast, a spaceborne mountain bearing down on them. They'd only been able to match velocity so much without being free to use thrusters on approach. And they had to get as close as possible before decelerating to preserve the element of surprise and to maximize the efficacy of their opening salvo. Emery felt a tug on her tether. That was the signal for her to ramp up her suit generator to full power and jettison her cooling filament. Moments later, she and three others fed their power into Tin Lizzie's Simbot at the center of their formation. The Simbot sucked in all it could and then unleashed it toward the Stroid as a massive microwave pulse. Emery bit her lip and hoped the plan would work. The completed Oxons were EMP-hardened, but Juan's intelligence suggested that incomplete ones, or ones that had their innards exposed in the process of expelling duplicate parts, would be vulnerable to the pulse. Sure enough, she could see many of the Oxons convulsing and shutting down, but there was no time to estimate the exact number of kills.
Reel out!
Lizzie disengaged from the tethers and fired her thrusters to decelerate for impact. At the same moment, she cut loose on the Stroid with a railgun. Meanwhile, the rest of the troubleshooters thrust backward and radially outward, the tethers reeling out between them. Emery strove for calm as the carbonaceous mountain hurled closer, trusting that she could reel out far enough not to slam into it headlong. Indeed, she and the others cleared the Stroid by a comfortable margin, but the X of tethers holding them together struck it at high velocity, slicing through a couple of dozen more Oxons and digging deep into the regolith. Emery flew past the Stroid and felt a centripetal yank as her tether began to wrap around it. She spiraled in toward the surface, the cable still reeling out, and she aimed for a shallow impact to minimize the force of it. But suddenly she felt the tether go slack. Either it had broken or an Oxon had cut it. Instantly, she hit the disengage and thrust sideways so the tether would miss her rather than slicing her suit open. But her HUD pointed out what she'd intuited anyway, that her trajectory hadn't curved enough to make Stroid fall. She was headed past it, out into space at high speed, and she had no more tether to fire at it. Then she spotted thruster emissions, a fellow shooter swinging around from the other side. She thrust toward them, aiming her comm laser.
Catch me! Catch me! I'm loose!
The other shooter changed vectors toward her, but she could tell it would be too little too late. She would pass too far beneath the other. Her only chance was to catch their tether, but how could she spot anything so slender in this vast, dark expanse? She made her best guess where it would be and swept her comm laser over the area on wide beam visible, hoping to spot some wispy strand of reflected light. But nanotubes absorbed light too damn well. Then something kicked her in the ass. The suit's armor absorbed most of the force, but it still hurt, and it knocked her into a backspin around her center of mass. She instantly adjusted her thrust vectors to keep pushing her Stroidward, even as she realized that the shot had come from the figure she'd called to for help. Was it really a Mekani? Just as she flipped over to face the figure, it fired a second volley of shots that took her right in her breastplate. Then a third volley hit the ribbed armor over her midriff. She was pushed further toward the Stroid. Only one person she knew had the marksmanship and the attitude to save her life in such a crass and bellicose fashion.
Cowboy!
He must be hitting her with high-impact kinetic slugs from his railgun. But before she could get anything else out, she slammed tail first into the regolith.
Y'all okay, darling?
Better than you'll be when I get my back and hands out of you, son of a bitch!
Through the dust, she saw Bhattacharya come down a few hundred meters away, landing almost gently.
Oh, easy there, Greenie. I reckon you're owing me now. Y'all can thank me proper after the mission.
Ugh, in your dreams. Shooting me in the ass is the closest you're getting to my pants.
How about I just don't rip your balls off for calling me Greenie?
How about y'all look behind you?
Oh, hell!
Emery used her thrusters to spin around. Two Oxhons were heading right for her. Ugly things, blocky and modular. Emery glanced over the heavy armor and razor-sharp claws of the car-sized Oxhons and decided this was not a hand-to-hand situation.
Damn it.
She hefted the high-power firearm she'd been assigned for this mission.
Goddess, I hate these things.
But the explosive bullet smashed through the Oxhon's armor quite effectively. After that, it was just point and shoot for a while. Emery didn't have the more complicated job on this mission. That fell to Juan and Kari, whose task was to capture the Mekani and access their control network to shut down the Oxhons. Suddenly, one Oxhon came in close and grabbed her leg with its pincers.
Ah!
Twisting sideways and back, she thrust out her fingers and sent a command to the glove to stiffen. Then she rammed it into the joint between two of the pincer arm's modules. Her hand knifed through, and she tore at whatever she could find until the pincer fell limp. As the battle went on, Emery realized the Oxhons were dying rather easily. Their nanotube-based weapons may have been easy to replenish, but were also their Achilles heel. Damaging their innards caused stray nanotubes to get into their electronics and short them out. At last, she made it to the other side of the Stroid, where the Mekani's main staging area had been. Had been was the right tense, since the tether impact had torn into it badly, as Tin Lizzie's weapons had no doubt done a few seconds later. Fragments of Oxhons drifted all over. Emery looked around through the half-settled dust to see Lizzie and Cowboy finishing off a few remaining Oxhons, but there didn't seem to be any left for her to play with. And it looked like Kari and Juan had the Mekani well in hand. There were four of them, gaunt, shiny carapaced bipeds without pressure suits, originally human, but having replaced as much of their bodies as possible with robotic parts in pursuit of technotheosis, the transcending of the flesh to achieve the divinity of AI.
Looks like I missed the good part. You get the shutdown codes?
They didn't have one. Jackknife's DLing their data, but we're having to finish them off the old-fashioned way.
Seems like they were counting on divine providence. This is their destined triumph after all, so of course their holy host wouldn't turn on them.
Traitor! You could have been one of us! You understand the divine gift of the machine! You've already cast aside half your vulgar flesh! How could you stand with these animals and oppose the perfecting of the universe?
Blaze, I'm too tired to think of a witty comeback, and I don't really care enough about these psycho morons to try. You got anything?
I don't know, maybe a good sack in the face if I thought they'd feel it. Hey, is that my job around here, the comic relief?
Well, it sure was funny the way she landed. Her tether broke and I...
Not another word, Cactus Face.
She's right. Let's can the chatter and get the scene secured. Then you can tell us all about it while we wait for the ships to get here.
But suddenly, Cowboy swung a rifle at Emery.
Whoa!
For a split second, she wondered if he was retaliating for her insult. But the shot had gone over her shoulder, and something spattered her helmet from behind. She thrust herself around, and there behind her floated a fifth Mekani, a hole blown in its ceramic skull, with a red cloud expanding around it. Its limbs jerked sporadically as it drifted slowly backward and down in the Stroid's faint gravity.
Sorry, darling. Only shot I could take with you in the way. Another second, that would have been you. Looks like that's two you're owing me.
You could have warned me. I could have taken it.
Wasn't about to be taking the chance, sweetheart. Your life's worth more than his, far as I'm concerned.
That silenced Emery, but brought her no comfort. It was faint praise, considering how little he seemed to care about the life he'd just ended. Demetria. Back at HQ, things were bustling, though it was mostly the enlarged support staff, since the T-shooters were staying busy out in the field. Lodestar had uncovered and thwarted a scheme of the Wellsprings scientist elite to break hardened inmates out of a Trojan penal habitat to perform mind-altering experiments that its governor had refused to permit. Paladin had exposed a major embezzlement operation within the government of a carbon mining colony in the Hygieans, while Bellatrix had talked the exploited miners down from launching an armed revolt. All in all, the news lately was more about battles averted than battles won or lost, and Emery found it refreshingly boring. She was surprised, though, when Sally called her to Sensei Villarreal's office and told her that Greg Tai wanted to speak to her.
What happened to Sensei?
Mr. Tai is expecting you. You're late.
I came as soon as you paged me. How can I be late?
By continuing to waste my time arguing about it.
Emery blinked, shook her head, and stormed into Sensei's office.
What happened to Sensei?
Come in, Emerald. Have a seat. Yukio's fine. He sends his best. He just decided that he could do more good for the Corps by getting out more. Concentrating on public relations and lobbying. You know, taking advantage of that swashbuckling charm of his to advance our goals, while leaving the day-to-day logistics of the TSC in other hands.
Your hands.
I was honored when he picked me, but admittedly, it was the most practical decision.
Emery smiled as she took a seat.
Yeah, I guess it was, yeah. I mean, you've been doing so much good around here. You're practically one of the family. So why not make it official? It's just weird to see someone else sitting behind that desk.
Believe me, it feels weird. But we're talking about the Archer here.
Tai gestured to the display case, which contained Sensei's old Shashu uniform, the green and gold body armor styled to suggest a samurai Robin Hood.
The legendary man of action. Does it really make sense for him to plant his ass behind a desk? That's much more in my line.
Oh, I don't know. You have the ass of a man who stays pretty active.
Thank you, Emerald, but given our working relationship now, I think a certain professional decorum is called for, don't you think?
Oh, sorry. So what did you want to see me about, boss?
I have an assignment that I think you'd be uniquely qualified for, Emerald.
Emery.
Uh-uh. Not during office hours.
Whatever fills your tank.
As I was saying, for this mission, Emerald, I need what you are. I need a Vanguardian.
I'm not a Vanguardian. My dad was, but they turned their back on him. On everyone.
My understanding is that he chose to leave them.
Only because they wouldn't help people after the war. And they never bothered to take an interest in him either after he left.
True. They've remained very insular ever since. Until now.
Now?
Elliot Thorne has recently begun making overtures to other transhumanist habitats in the Outer Belt and elsewhere. It seems he's trying to arrange a summit to discuss a possible alliance.
You're kidding. Thorne offering an alliance?
It would be a rather radical shift in policy, wouldn't it? That's why we need someone there to find out what's behind it.
You want me to spy on them?
Not exactly. Of course, there's no way the Green Blaze can go incognito. But troubleshooters are mods, too, so the case can be made that the Corps has a legitimate interest. We've made overtures, and they've shown a guarded willingness to allow a TSC observer to attend, which is only natural. If they have nothing to hide, they should have no problem with it. And if they do have something to hide, refusing would only raise suspicions. But they'd be most likely to accept if it were you, Emerald, and your family ties would give you an in that other troubleshooters would lack. If you approach them as a long-lost relative interested in learning about her heritage, that could give you access to channels they might not open to another delegate. You might learn something they wouldn't reveal in public. And if you give them the impression that your loyalties might be flexible, you might learn even more. Say, information about their real intentions for this alliance. Whether there's been some change to make them suddenly interested in broadening their reach, and whether that change might pose a threat to other states.
So you do want me to spy on them?
To gather intelligence, yes.
To seduce them. Pretend I want to get close just so I can, take advantage of them?
Emerald, I've studied your files. I've seen how you dress. You're no stranger to seduction.
That's different. That's sex, not family.
Frankly, I didn't expect you to worry so much about the Vanguard's feelings. You've never shown any interest in dealing with them before.
And I'd like to keep it that way.
You're a professional, Miss Blair. You have responsibilities beyond your personal likes and dislikes. Responsibilities that include identifying threats to the peace, regardless of where they originate.
What threats? Thorne's bunch may not have been too neighborly for a while, but have they done anything wrong? They were heroes once upon a time.
Maybe that's how it's taught in the Belt, but Earth's experience with them was more ambivalent. Yes, they took it upon themselves to use their enhancements for peacekeeping during a time of turmoil. But even then, they acted like a law unto themselves, not respecting the proper authorities, not caring about the property damage they inflicted in their battles, or sometimes even the innocent people they endangered. They thought they were above us, in more senses than one, and they weren't afraid to exploit their advantages. Not all of them. Of course, there were some fine people in their ranks, your father and grandfather among them. But sadly, neither of them is around anymore. The Vanguard is ruled by its most ambitious, politically radical, and charismatic member, and given how thoroughly closed it's been for the past 30 years, it doesn't seem like he has a lot of opposition. And if he's suddenly interested in broadening his ties to other Mod nations, well, that's something we need to investigate. Especially given the nature of the pitch he's been making. This summit is also something of a coming-out party for his daughter, Psyche Thorne. Psyche. Even the name is a boast. Rumor is she represents the pinnacle of the Vanguard's efforts to enhance the human mind as well as the body. The summit is meant to show her off as an example of how far Vanguard science can elevate the human potential. It's a sales pitch, and she's the demo model. Join us, and you too can become part of a superior race.
I don't know. Sure, Thorne's politics rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but he never made a violent power play on Earth, and he's never caused any trouble in the Belt. So if he wants to hold a summit meeting, what business do we have spying on it? We just keep the peace. We don't judge anybody's politics so long as they don't make trouble.
That's exactly the thinking that gave the Neo-Gaians the freedom to attack Chakra City. That would have let the Mekani unleash a plague of killer robots within the week if you hadn't stopped them.
Ty handed her a sheet of e-paper from his desk.
Look at the invitation list, Emerald. Neo-Gaia is on there. Zarathustra, Wellspring, Mars Martialis, the Moreau Foundation. Even the Mekani got an invitation, though they refused. These are people who have no qualms about using unborn children as guinea pigs for untested, potentially dangerous mods. People who believe that mods are destined to rule or supplant baseline humans by force if necessary. People who use their enhancements to pursue terrorist or criminal...
You don't have to tell me what they do. I know what the Neos did to Arkady. I know what the Wellspringers do to kids.
Then you know what it suggests if the Vanguard is getting in bed with them. The fragmentation of the militant Mod nations is possibly the only thing that's kept them from emerging as a serious system-wide threat. But the one thing they all have in common is their reverence for the Vanguard as the ones who started it all, the ones whose example they've all tried to follow. If they were united under a charismatic, ambitious leader like Elliot Thorne, just imagine, Emerald. You're right. They've done nothing wrong yet, just getting together to talk. But if that talk is going to lead to something dangerous, we need to know about it before it happens. And you're the best troubleshooter for the job, Green Blaze. Not just because of your heritage, but because of your skills, your training, your insight.
It's asking a lot of me.
I know. It's clear there's no love lost between you and your father's family. That's why I can count on you to be objective, to see through any smokescreens they put up. You just have to let them think otherwise.
I am a lousy poker player.
So I've heard. Just remember how much higher the stakes are. Make sure the uniform stays on. Figuratively, at least.
Okay. I got it, boss. I'll do my best. I promise.
I'm certain you will. But Emerald, I do like to keep things professional. In the future, please wait until I dismiss you. And I'd appreciate it if you'd call me sir.
Emery stared for a second, but then decided it was a harmless enough request. It wasn't the way Sensei did business, but surely Ty had earned it by now.
Yes, sir. Will there be anything else?
No, Emerald. You're dismissed. I'll have the staff arrange your invitation.
Thank you, sir.
Zephyr spoke up in her head after she left the office.
By the way, Psyche doesn't literally mean mind. It means the breath of life, the spirit. It's also the Greek word for butterfly. Ty may be in error about Thorne's intent behind his daughter's name.
I'll keep that in mind.
As a representative of the Greek pantheon myself, I feel I have to keep these things straight.
Thank you, Zephyr.
Are you sure you're all right with this mission, Emery? Your biofeedback suggests you're troubled.
It's like the man said, it's the job. I'll deal with it. It's just, I'd prefer to avoid anyone who had any connection to my father.
I understand. But maybe confronting that aspect of your past will be healing.
All I know is, it won't be easy.
Everything worthwhile is hard, dear. I was wondering if your reasons for concern paralleled mine. This mission seems to venture into a gray area, to direct troubleshooter resources toward people who have done nothing wrong based on vague suspicions.
They're hooking up with Wellspringers and Neo-Gaians.
Emery didn't care who might be listening.
That's reason enough to be suspicious. You know what kind of things they do. There was a time the Vanguard fought people like them.
The Neo-Gaian regime that attacked Earth has been deposed, Emery. The current one may be different. As for the Wellspringers, I agree they have a tendency to condone ethically questionable research. But on the whole, they're a peaceful group.
Peaceful. That's what they call it. But it means neutralizing unpleasant emotions. Ones like guilt and shame. I've seen the things they've done.
Emery, you've done quite a few unethical things in your day. I've seen the movie.
Maybe. And maybe I didn't feel much shame about it at the time. But the difference is, I never pretended I was doing something good.